Welcome to the Locksmith Security Network. LSN is your powerful resource hosted by Wayne Winton for all things locksmith and security. Hello, this is Wayne, and this is the Locksmith Security Network, and I am here today with special guest Marty Jalove. If you could go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit here and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you've done, we'll get into the interview here.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Wayne. Wayne, first off, I got to tell you, I'm a big fan of yours. I'm a big fan of your show. You're one of these guys that the first time I heard of you, met you, I've just wanted to get to know you more. Let's put it this way. I think that you're a force in the industry, and it's a force that's well-deserved, well-needed in this industry. So I have been, like I talked to you a little bit earlier, I hate to say it, but I've been in the industry since the early 80s, and it's really aging myself, you know. But I started out in distribution in the locksmith industry as a graphic designer, got into sales, got to start meeting locksmiths, the small mom and pop shops and the larger shops, and just getting to understand the lure of the lock, to quote somebody else. And then later in my career, I moved into manufacturing, where I developed a lot of tools based on the information, you know, talking with locksmiths, what they needed, developed some cool tools. And in about 2020, I left the industry to start my own business called Master Happiness, where I help small businesses with their marketing, with their employee issues, employee retention, their finding their core values, their mission, etc. And then luckily, recently, I got connected back with HPC Hudson Lock as a consultant to help them, you know, bring back the new old HPC. So I'm really excited about that. So I am glad to be back in this industry that has just been an incredible part of my life.
Wow. Wow. That's great. That's great. Yeah. And we had actually, I believe the first time we met was where it was down at Banner, or when it was HL Flake, I think.
Yes.
You were teaching for HPC, and you had some of the tools and stuff there, and we got to play around with that.
I remember that so specifically because it was, and the tool we had was, we were just introducing the cylinder eater.
Yep.
It was the coolest tool because I never claimed to be a locksmith. I admire locksmiths. I work with my hands, but I would have probably made a terrible locksmith. Okay. Everything that I've ever done successful as a locksmith has been in a laboratory setting, right? You know, with the car door actually unlocked and me sticking a tool in there, something like that. So when we were teaching that class and I was showing the cylinder eater, you came in with a cameraman and the whole bit going, show us something new. We want to make a video of this. And I was like, I'm not demonstrating this tool. All right. So I said, Wayne, it's so easy. You should demonstrate this tool. Right. And that was it exactly. And it was cool because it was my brainchild that I helped invent that tool.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things of, it's easier to invent the tool sometimes than actually using the tool. And we went through it. You struggled a little bit because it was a brand new tool to you, but we got it to work. And it was really cool. And I think that was the beginning of a really neat friendship between you and I. Right?
I think so, too. Yeah. The fact that we were able to, you know, like just kind of jump right in, like you wanted to talk about it and I wanted to demo it and see it and get some hands on. Like, that's what I like to do. And I believe what the problem was is we had it set to drill a 5-pin lock.
Yep.
But we actually had a 6-pin lock
set
up. And so it worked. The tool worked flawlessly. It drilled all 5 pins.
Yeah.
But we had one extra one in the back, and it took just a minute to figure that out. But in all reality, the class ended up getting a lesson in, there's a difference between what happens in the classroom after you've tried something several times and know what's going to happen, and what happens out in the real world.
Yeah,
you know,
it was very fun. And I loved it because I was like, wow, this guy can't make this work. This is a terrible testimonial for this tool. But it was cool because we were both looking at, what are we missing here?
Mm-hmm.
And I could see frustration in both of our faces. But then you figured it out. You were like, yeah, we got it. We got it. We opened that lock. It was fantastic. It was a great.
We ended up getting it done. Like I said, we just had to figure out that was that last pin hanging up. And then it did. And then it worked flawlessly. It worked fine. And it's one of those things that, you know, I'll still use. It's a great beginner's tool to learn. Yes. And it, because it sets it up and it puts that hole exactly where you need it to be.
Right. Right.
Where when you're trying to freehand, you can kind of bounce off, you can shear off as soon as you hit to certain pins, you can break drill bits, like a lot of different things can happen. So it's really, really great for a training tool to get started with. And
well, I'll tell you, even the backstory on it, when we first created it, this is when I was working at HPC years ago. And I had a team of locksmiths and some machinists in a room. And I said, this is the dream. Could we make a drill attachment that was kind of universal and be able to open many different locks? And we worked through it. We prototyped it. We created this piece. And then right before we released it, we laid it down. And we said, this is too easy to use. Is this a tool that we should put out in the market? Because in the wrong hands, it's a great little burglary tool. I mean, I hate to put it any other way, but obviously it's one of those tools that we only sell to this industry. There you go. Oh, great. Thanks for pulling it up.
Right. Yeah.
So we sell it only to this industry to make sure it doesn't get in the wrong hands.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's kind of the beauty of it there is, you know, it is designed to make things super easy and super smooth. Yeah. And you, there is a little bit of knowledge that's involved with it too, is you have to identify the proper keyway. And as you can see here, you've got to have the proper key blank inserted in there in order to get it to work and to actually get it to operate.
Right. Right.
But yeah, it's just one of those things that once you get the concept and once you see what it does and really understand it, then all of a sudden it just, everything kind of clicks, if you will.
And this has also been one of those, ideas of mine is I've always wanted to make specialty tools specific to the locksmith industry, because I believe if we use standard tools, if a locksmith uses standard tools that the homeowner or the business owner looks at and says, oh, I could get those tools at Home Depot or that kind of a place, what happens is you lose a little bit of credibility. But if you've got specialty tools that do a job in a very specific way, it adds to the credibility of a locksmith. And it says, wow, those are cool tools. Those are specialized. And for a locksmith to say, yeah, these are tools only sold into the locksmith industry means a lot.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. It's like when you pull out a Leashy tool today and like pick a lock, you know what I mean? Oh, well, that's not just some lock picks that you can just buy on Amazon or whatever. Right. Well, now you kind of can. I mean, it's everybody's selling these things. They're knocked off everywhere. I mean, anything that's a good idea is going to get knocked off. And that's the unfortunate part about good ideas.
I think that's how you know if it's a good idea or not, if it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it? Imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
There you go. So I do agree. We need more of those specialty tools, tools that look the part. Yeah. And there's part of it in, and we'll get to that later in a book that I wrote. But it's that whole idea of a professional presence.
Right.
And you know that a good locksmith could get into a car, you know, with a coat hanger and a shim, right?
Right. Yeah.
But what ends up happening is as soon as somebody sees you using those types of tools, they start going, well, why am I paying you so much when you're just getting in? The average consumer doesn't view the value of the service as much as sometimes looking at the tools. So sometimes just a sharper looking tool, a newer looking tool, a specialty tool means a lot more, carries a lot more weight.
Exactly. Like if I come in to open a safe and, you know, I pull out this like James Bond mini rig and bolts on, and it's got all these cool colors and parts and drill bits and, you know, just all of this stuff, all this specialty stuff and scopes, you know, I'm scoping, I'm looking, you know, they see. $4,000 or $5,000 worth of equipment there.
Right.
All of a sudden, the $500, $1,200 that I'm charging for that job, it kind of adds up and kind of makes sense.
I agree.
Whereas, you know, I've had that where, you know, and I've got rebuttals for those people too, who, you know, you open their car in 5 minutes and I still actually use the long reach tool for almost everything.
Yeah,
I just, I haven't adopted, I know it's coming, and there are some vehicles that like they automatically relock, there's sensors and stuff built into them. They're very, 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 very difficult to get in without using the key or the Leashy tools, without generating a key or using those Leashy tools. And I've had people say, well, that that only took you, you know, 30 seconds to get right in my car. Why are you charging me $150? And it's like, well, I can throw the keys back in and we can talk for a half an hour if you want. Like, what do you want? Right, do you want your keys? Do you want to go about your life? Or just because I figured out how to do something in a short amount of time. Plus, you're not paying for that 30 seconds. You're paying for the decade ahead of time to do it in 30 seconds.
Right. So when I was young, like I said, in my early 20s and I was in distribution, I would go out and I would travel with locksmiths, not to sell them anything, but to really learn the trade, what they went through. And I remember a guy, now I live outside of Chicago. And so Rockford is a suburb, a northwest suburb. And I went to this locksmith there and I went on some lockouts with him. I was new into it, a month into the industry. Mm-hmm. And somebody had locked the keys to their home inside the house, right? Mm-hmm. And this woman was frantic outside and the locksmith said, all right, no problem. He looked at the lock and he told the woman, I'll tell you what, double check the back door if it's open, right? Just to double check it. And as she walked away, he stuck his pick in there, an attention tool, popped the lock open in seconds, right? But then what he did was he turned on his drill and he's revving his drill in the air. Right? And I'm like, what's that about? And he goes, it's unfortunately, sometimes we have to put on a show because to justify the amount that I'm going to charge her. And he goes, I certainly can't be doing that in the air while she's standing right here, right? Which you're the drill. He opened his toolbox, laid out a whole bunch of stuff. And there is something to be said about expediency. Right. But I understood that moment when she came back and she looked at all the stuff, she had heard the noise, the door was open. She was so elated, right?
Yeah.
And she gladly just paid the bill. All right.
Yeah.
That might have been different if he just went bing, 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 opened the lock. She probably would have been terrified, like, oh my gosh, that means somebody can get into my house that easily.
Well, see, and there's another avenue too.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother avenue where I almost kind of like the quick show you that I can pop your lock in 10 seconds or less. Oh, by the way, we also sell this $300, high security deadbolt.
You're right.
How about that? And now you turn that frown upside down and you say, well, here's what's on your home. You saw how easy it was for me to bypass that. And then I'll even pull out one more thing and I'll say, will you do me a favor? And will you pull out your phone and type Schlage lockpicked or Kwikset lockpicked or whatever is common on their door.
Right.
And tell me how many videos you see and how many views they have.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden their face goes.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now you've got, the $150 for the lockout. And then you've got the Medico or ASA or high security or multi-lock or whatever brand you prefer. High security deadbolt installation. Mm-hmm. And then, then that even maybe opens up the opportunity. Maybe there's one on the back door too. Now you can kind of, I almost turn it into like a penetration test and these are the weak points in your home.
That
I know how I would go about fixing it. And then on top of that, like I sell security systems and alarms now too. Okay. So there's more with that. There's a video online right now with lockpicking lawyer guy
who
defeats SimpliSafe with a $5 tool on Amazon with a jammer, or with a basically a ham radio.
Yeah.
And so the system that we sell alternates that radio frequency, so you don't know what radio frequency it's on all the time, which was the liability in that system.
Yeah.
So I utilize the everything, every negative has a positive.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. And just as long as, and I just want to touch on this thing, because I've also seen some security professionals, and I'm going to call them security professionals, not locksmiths, because a locksmith has a certain code of honor. All right. Security professionals, what they do is they automatically upsell and they sell that real high-end lock that is probably the lock is stronger than the door or the frame.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that's the type of thing where it borders on unethical selling. Okay.
Right.
You got to sell the right security for the right situation. That's what's important. But I do like the idea of looking at that and your way of saying for every, I don't know how you just put it, for every obstacle or whatever.
For every negative, there's a positive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because you're right. Some customers you're going to have to put on a show to justify the time, and others you're going to use that as a path to an upsell. Yeah.
Right.
I love both of it. And this is where the business mind has to come in, the part beyond being a technician.
Right.
Taking it to the next step.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And there's so many guys out there that are missing those opportunities. Like every you know, cheap little Century Safe open that we go do, or every hardware store, you know, box that we open is an opportunity to then say, you bought something that was mass produced.
Yep.
I'm doing the job you hired me to do. And as a security professional, I feel it's my duty to let you know and inform you about these other products that might meet your needs better. I never come off as like a pushy salesman. Right. And it's not my job to be a salesman, but I do feel it is our job as security professionals and locksmiths and our code of ethics to tell people, you know, there are some pretty serious vulnerabilities with this system that you have. And that's one of the things that I have a lot of videos online, but I don't have any like safe bypassing videos and stuff like that. And that's one of the bigger issues that I see with like, you know, Lockpicking Lawyer and some of these other guys out there is you're showing people like a family went out and decided to pick that safe up and put their medication or a firearm or something in there to keep it away from their kids. They at least put forth some effort to do so. And not everybody is going to spend an 8-hour research session on every subreddit out trying to figure out what the best one is. They had a problem. They needed to keep certain things away from kids or certain people. And they took action steps to do so. And then now you're showing how to bypass that. What are those? Who's watching YouTube? You know what I mean?
Right.
The people that you designed that you want to keep out of that thing are the ones that are watching it and that are going to find those things and be able to bypass and get access to those restricted items that you specifically wanted to put away. That's kind of where I come in on that. But I mean, there's nothing that I can say. He's going to do whatever he's going to do.
Of course. And if not him, it's plenty of other people are going to do the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
If you looked at just going back for a second, the cylinder eater. When we put it online, not that you don't have to show it or anything, but when you put it online, what we showed was just the tool entering the lock. And then we'd say, wow, and it opened. Tool entering the lock, wow, and it opened. Because we didn't want to go into great detail to explain it just for that reason. Yeah. We didn't want somebody who didn't have the knowledge already to come back and go, oh, I figured out a way to do this. Now I know how to drill open a lock.
Right.
There are certain things that I'm agreeing with you that need to be kept private.
Right.
For things that are specific to the locksmith industry.
Right. Right. Yeah, and I mean, we live in an age right now where there's really no secrets. I mean, there's way too much information about safes and security bypass online, but there's also a certain level of contributing to it as well. Like if I put something out, then somebody else is going to build off of that and try and push that bar further. And then somebody else is going to push that bar even further. And that's where I kind of like one of the restrictions I put on myself, because some people love the content that I put out. Some people say it's too much and that I put out too much information. Some people say that it doesn't matter because everything's already out there anyways.
Right.
And really one of the fine lines I draw is, does the manufacturer have a video out? What is the manufacturer doing? And so like airbag tools, like long reach tools.
Right.
Those manufacturers have videos of those tools being used in action. Right. Every police officer station, every fire department has them. Like people aren't putting prescription medication and firearms in cars to keep them away from kids. You know what I mean? Like, does that kind of make sense? So you know, showing how to open up a car isn't really that big a deal right now. There's millions of videos on it. And the manufacturers are actually putting that information out there versus like what you said, hey, how do we show how this tool works, but not really? Like, how do we show what it does and how it works, but how do we kind of not show the details?
And so you talk about shooting what is obvious or what can be seen, not demonstrating the stuff that's behind the scenes, the intricacies, the things that your eye can't see. You know, like you use the example of a car. I know that anyone who's never opened a car can look in and say, if I could only reach that switch, I could open this, right? And it makes sense. The door opens. So can I open the door just a little bit, stick something in there, right? So those are things that are obvious. But for most people, they don't know what's inside a lock. They don't know about the pins. They don't know about the springs. They don't know that if I drill a shear line, what's going to happen. So that's the type of things that I think need to be kept secret. Not that we can put that genie back in the bottle, right?
Yeah, but there's contributing to, and then there's just, hey, you know, there's certain things that are out there.
Yeah.
I can't control what other people do, but I can control what I do. And, exactly. And so that's just kind of the line that I go. And like I said, and then there's everybody's opinion on it. You know what I mean? Right. Some people say it's too much. Some people say I put out too much information. Yeah. Some people say it's already out there. You know, you don't blame the maker of the knife or the criminal who stabbed somebody.
Right. Exactly.
You know, there's a million different ways to look at it. So
at
the end of the day, what really needs to happen is the individual needs to find out what their code of ethics is and then stick with that. And that's pretty much what I've done.
I love it. And you know what? And just that, where you just touched on, is the first thing I do whenever I work with any business.
Mm-hmm.
Is we work on those core values.
Right.
And what we do is I have worksheets and I tell people work on it for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just say, hey, this is what I believe in. We're done. This is something that really takes time for the owner to think about. What does he value? What does he stand for? And then, or she, and then work with your entire team, get them to do that same exercise and then come together and discuss it. And you find that there are some very important things you stand for. And it's not to say that you stand, you know, it's not to say that you're eliminating these other things. And if I pick five true core values, it doesn't mean that I don't have other values, but these are the ones I really stand for. And as soon as you do that, what's so great is all your decisions are made about those core values. And it touches right with you saying, I'm going to protect some of the secrets of locksmiths, right? Because part of my code of ethics is to protect the public, protect my customers.
Right.
And although it would be fun to show this cool video and see how cool I am because I breached this security, although that would be fun, it's against my core values or my code of ethics. And I think that's where every business has to start. What is that going for?
Exactly. And it's not to say that we can't use that content, because I love filming that content and I love showing people this is what happens in the real world when you're drilling a safe and you snap, you know, 27 drill bits trying to open one container. But that information is then kept and put behind a paywall for industry professionals. So there is a way to kind of utilize both pieces of information. And it's just in how it's really distributed.
Correct. I agree with you. Couldn't agree with you more.
Well, on the subject of that, you are one of the few people who has put out information in books for locksmiths. So let's go ahead and talk about this one here, the Locksmith Marketing Playbook.
Yeah.
How did you come up
as well right here?
Yeah. Yes. How did you come up with this? And I've been flipping through it here. You've actually got like little worksheet sections built into the book, a bunch of
little. It's a beefy book.
It's a beefy book. Yeah. It's no slouch for sure.
So what happened was, like I said, when I started, I absolutely loved traveling with locksmiths and understanding and meeting the team. All right. Mm-hmm. And so much, you know, are so many family owned locksmith shops. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I found so many where it was one member was the locksmith and the spouse was the bookkeeper or something like that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would bring in a nephew or their child and say, you know, we're going to build this and pass it down to you. And there's multi-generations and they stay at a certain size. Right. Because, you know, as a business owner, the toughest hire you ever make is your first hire, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
So sometimes they stay at that size and they don't grow any further. And they go, oh, this is good. We've got income coming in. But I talk with them and I go, so what is your plan? Do you have a succession plan in mind? Do you have ideas of growth? What do you want to do? What's your next step? How do you envision your place 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now? And so many came back with the whole, oh my gosh, I don't even know what I'm going to do next week, let alone 5 years from now, right? And I would say, I love everything you guys are doing so much. I want to help you take it to the next step.
Right.
And so I started teaching classes, and I used to teach classes on a car opening. It was really cool. I taught a class called the 13 methods of opening cars, right? Mm-hmm. That was when there was 13 methods. Now it seems like one. But I taught that. I taught a master keying class with HBC's Master King. And then I started teaching the business classes. And I started teaching marketing for locksmiths, advertising for locksmiths, turning all your locksmiths into salespeople. Right. I started doing a AI for locksmiths class, social media for locksmiths, employee retention and recruiting, because I wanted to teach them all of this information. And when we first started that, it was great because I was getting a lot of people in a room and people were like anxious and wanting to do this. But I found a similar thing, and that was, oh, that seems like so much work. I just want to go and do my job. I want to go out and help people who are locked out or install new locks and install security systems. I don't want to get into the business end of the business. And you start getting a separation between those locksmiths of going, I can make a little bit more money if I can just learn how to pick this one lock or how to repair this one whatever, right?
Right.
And slowly I saw at these shows and stuff, what was happening was if somebody said, hey, this is how to replace the cam on a blank, 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 whatever, they'd get 300 people in the class. Right. I would go, this is going to be 5 guaranteed ways to build your business based on your marketing plan. And I'd get 3 people in the class.
Yeah.
Okay? And so it was trying to change the mindset. And I kept pushing it, working all over the country. I was teaching these marketing classes at every trade show I would work on all over the country for all the major distributors. Yep. And it just got to a point where it was a lot of effort for very few people grasping the idea.
Yeah.
So I worked with HPC and they said, hey, we would love to see if we can grab that knowledge and put it to print form.
Yeah.
I created this book of all the years of teaching the class over and over and over again, all the basics, do this first, then do this, remember this, etc. And it's a product now. It's available on Amazon, but it's also available through your locksmith distributor through Hudson Lock.
Oh, okay, great. So it's like a Hudson product, kind of.
Yes, exactly. And so it takes a locksmith on a journey right from the very beginning. We talk about in the beginning the your core values, trying to establish what it is I stand for, and then moving forward, how do you promote yourself? How do you differentiate yourself?
Right. Okay.
One of the things, Wayne, you would love this. In the class, when we start, I ask, differentiation is so important to me. That's why you see me, I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt. I'm branded all the time, right?
Right, right.
Is I ask them if I needed a locksmith, if I needed something, some security help, right? And I'm walking down the street and there's 10 locksmiths, 5 on each side of the street. All right. And they're all saying reliable service, emergency service, right? We do lockouts, etc. They all blend together. What do you do to stand out so that at least I will come and knock on your door? Okay, you might be one of the 1 or 2 that I'm going to go see. What do you do? How do you differentiate yourself? How do you stand out among all of the clutter of so many other people's trying to grab my attention?
Yep.
And I think that's what's so important. And we go through in the classes a lot of times. I tell people, you know, when they're there, show me your business card. Let's redesign it from the ground up. How are you standing out? What makes you special?
Yeah. Okay.
So I love teaching this class, especially to the locksmith industry, because there's something about them being the last of this core small businesses, right?
Right.
And it's something that we can still do. If you're committed to it and learn the security industry, this is something that almost anyone can enter this industry.
Yes.
And feel really good about what they're doing for the public.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, with business cards, I mean, we kind of teach very, very similar things. And I've done that too with marketing and really my main focus was social media was, you know, how do we get your business on Google? How do you maintain your Google My Business listing? How can you utilize Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and all these other avenues to help, you know, motivate and advertise your business?
Right.
And like you said, like the business card, like that's one of the very first things. I don't know if I have one handy. Maybe not, but one of my ones, the card is oval, you know, and it says Safe Kraken, like with a K, you know, like the mythical
creature,
right? I had an ambulance with that on there. It looked like an old safe, big, bright gold lettering. And people would literally ask me, you know, oh, are you guys the ones with the big black trucks? You know, yeah. You know, that's branding, right?
Right. Completely. You need to be able to stand out like that.
Yeah.
I want to throw out one great little tip for anyone who's listening to the show, what they can mm-hmm. do that's beyond the business card, right? Yeah. And think about this. If what I really want, especially today, is instead of me handing you a business card that they're going to lose somewhere, it's going to stay in their pants in the wash and they're going to lose my card, right? Mm-hmm. I want you to put my name in your phone, right?
Yeah.
That would be the ideal thing. And I want it to say locksmith. So if they ever need a locksmith, they're going to go to their phone and look up locksmith. Mm-hmm. But I want to make an impression with you so that you'll remember, oh, that's right. I do have a locksmith, a great locksmith in my phone. So in case somebody needs one, right? But how do you get somebody to open up their contacts and put your name in there? All right. And one of the things I do is this, is you have to come up with your own kind of code system. All right. And let's say you do a lockout. You get to somebody's vehicle, you pop open their door, you let them in the car, you tell them, hey, I'll tell you what, if you'd like, we can make you an extra key to your vehicle. We can make you a key to the front door of your business. We can make you a key to the front door of your home, whatever it is. Come up with a coding system and you say, enter my name in your phone and in the notes, put this code in there. Mm-hmm. All right. The code means nothing to anyone. Right. Yeah. It don't use the regular automotive code that anyone can decipher. Don't use a direct digit code where anyone can cut the key. Use a specialty code, and it could be your invoice number and the date, etc. Now what you do is you tell them at any point in time, if you are locked out of your vehicle again, you can call me. Give me that code that's in your notes. And at the shop, I will cut you a brand new key and come over there. Now all you have to do is pay for the key and my travel. You won't have to pay for me opening the lock, an emergency, lockout.
Decoding.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And just that in itself, and you tell them immediately. And if you'd like, let's create codes for your home, your business, your other vehicles, etc. And suddenly you become a valued member of their family because you become their security specialist. You become the guy they go to for help.
Yeah, exactly. And then now I think I have one of those cards too that I've actually got it in my wallet here. One of these little guys here.
Yeah, the dot cards. Yes.
Yeah. So boom, that comes out. And then I basically just put this up against their phone and then boom, all my information's there. And I tell them, hey, add me as a contact, put me in your contacts as locksmith, because here's the deal. We all know how expensive Google My Business Google guaranteed pay-per-click ads are. Yep. You know, people are paying $10, $15, $20, $30, $40, $50 a click to get that one call. And anytime you can leave any kind of advertising, like I'm a huge fan of putting, you know, like little QR codes and stickers and stuff like this little guy right here. You know, I can put that on a door and it doesn't say locksmith anywhere on it. It just says scan for service. Yep. And what happens is now that's right above the lock. And they know that, you know, hey, you know, when they call somebody like a handyman or somebody is looking, they're looking for a phone number. They're looking for some kind of indication to call.
Right.
And that works great. The other thing this works really well for is that's on the door. So if they're closed or something, like people who come up, is random customers, they'll scan it, and it actually drives a tremendous amount of foot traffic to my website.
Well, that's awesome.
It may not be exactly what they're looking for, and every now and then I get a phone call. Hey, are you guys open? No, we're just the locksmith. We work on the doors there, but if you know, here's their store hours or whatever.
Right. But, I do like that, and I love it. Is to put your information right at the pain point.
Yes.
Right.
You have a problem. It's right there.
That's it. The solution is just a click away. Yeah.
Yeah. And what I found over the last decade is managers come and go. Those personal connections come and go. People come and go. This little sucker stays right there and it's there all the time. And then I get introduced to that new manager. I get introduced to that new person.
Sure.
And you know, I actually did a keynote presentation for Papa Lock. About how to Google proof your business. And that's one of the things is personal branding, leaving something at the site of each door. Now you can't do that really on residential, applications, but you can leave keychains. You can have keychains. You can have the cool little keychains, little bottle opener keychains. People love those. Having individual stamped keys with your company logo and stuff on them. Anything for them to have a direct line to you.
Right. Anything that is of value to them. Right. I don't think the world needs any more stress balls. Right. but anything of real value that you leave as along with showing that you are the one offering value.
Yeah. Okay.
So give me something worth holding on to. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And a memory that you're the right person to call.
Yes.
I think that's what's really important. Is this idea of differentiate yourself so you stand out.
Yep.
And secondly, is add so much value to them, they don't want to forget you.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. That's what's so very important.
Exactly. 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 Well, let's just go ahead and jump into this one here.
Oh, so you like that one too.
Legends of Sales. So you've got some of the most influential people of our time, Steve Jobs, some of these other people. So how did you come up with this? I'm guessing you probably have read a few books.
I have read more than a few books. Yes, yes. I am one of those kind of people who just suck up information. I try to read, I do these like abridged books, the audio books, the shorter versions of them. And I read at least one or two books that way every week.
Yeah.
All right. So I easily go through 100 books a year that I'm reading constantly, reading the books over and over and over again. And if I really like them, then I buy the full book. Mm-hmm. All right. And so I become a student of life with all of these guys. So there's about 40 different true legends of sales in there.
Yeah.
And all they are mini chapters, just give you a glimpse enough about them, because I write the books the way I like to read. I don't want to read a novel. I want to read a small piece. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that's a glimpse of some of the books and where you can get those books. That's just a glimpse. I haven't updated in a while of some of the books that I've read.
Right.
All right. And so a lot of that information of the other authors, of the things that they've said, I've reused in some of my own books.
Right.
But that book, The Legends of Sales, like I said, is about 40 people. It goes on from like people like Socrates,
okay,
all the way up to the Wolf of Wall Street. Mr. Beast is in there.
Jordan Belford.
Yes, yes, exactly. So anyone in sales is going to know him. Yeah. And so what we do in that book is do a short introduction. This is who this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
The second part is what is their claim to fame as far as being a sales legend or a marketing legend,
right? All right.
How you can use it for your own business, like what you can learn from them,
right?
And then it breaks it down. Then I do a small intro on putting their ideas into process, right? And then finally give you 3 points to remember about those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. There's little spots where you can take notes and kind of add stuff and do all of that in there too.
So I am working, just so you know, Wayne, I'm working on part two, The Legends of Sales number two.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Because there are so many, after you finish a book like that, you go through going, oh my God,
I missed
this guy. I missed this person. I missed this woman. Right. There's all kinds of people out there that we can all learn lessons from.
Yeah. Yeah. And really after like you do, I listen to books. I'm horribly dyslexic. ADHD just creates a recipe for disaster for trying to read things. But I listen. I basically turn my truck into a university.
There you go.
And listen all day. I've got a 2020 F-350 truck and it's got like 260,000 miles on it. So it gives you an idea of how long I'm in the truck all day. You know, I probably
drive
50,000 miles plus per year. And that's just in that vehicle. That's not to mention personal vehicles, just doing personal stuff. So I'm in the vehicle a lot. And so why not turn that into a university and grab an Audible account, you know?
Right. Yeah.
That's really where to go. And you'll notice.
I'll suggest something also. Yeah. There is an app called Blinkist. Okay. And what that does is it takes those books.
Yeah.
And knocks them down to 15 to 20 minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so what they do is just cover the key points. And
right.
This is what I mean is that I'll listen to that. And sometimes I'll just hit replay and listen to the same book, the key points over and over again. get them embedded in my brain. And if I really, really like it, all right, then I'll buy that book. And trust me, I'm looking around here. I've got probably over 300 books here. Okay. I'm like, these are the ones I really like. So I'm going to buy this one and read through it. And then what I'll do is, because I'm with you, I hate sitting reading a book.
Yep.
Okay. But I'll sit in my lazy boy, open the book, play Audible, and let Audible read the books I'm flipping through. And if I like something, I stop and I put the notes right in the book.
Right.
So I am really just want to suck up information constantly.
Right.
And that's but more than just suck it up. I want to then take it and share it with people and say, this makes sense. Use it.
Right. And that information really, the path that you're talking about there really is like a neural pathway enhancer, because you're listening and then you're reading and then you're regurgitating.
Yeah. So then suddenly I'll never forget it. Can't remember my kids' names, but I'll remember what's in the book.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Wait, at some point in time, I think you and I should teach a class together.
We absolutely should.
I think it would be, because we'd be coming at the same problems from two different sides. I think that would be a great benefit to this industry.
I think it would be great too. And we now have the abilities to do that. I think putting together something in like an on-demand webinar series would be great. And then we could try and get it through distribution as well. I'm finally having success breaking down those walls. And I, like you, like on that point, I, like you, found a little bit of frustration with trying to offer sales and marketing classes and business classes at trade shows and conventions. And here's the conclusion I've come to.
Okay.
One of two things is happening, and probably a little bit of both, is at a trade show, they can only get that specific information about that car or that safe or that lockpicking class or that leashy class. And they want to save that hands-on time for that master instructor, that one thing that they know is going to directly affect them the most. And that's the only time that they really have to do that, is at a trade show and convention, hands-on atmosphere. Whereas the business classes kind of fall secondary.
It's true. That's a valid point.
But it's not that they don't want it, and it's not that they don't need it. It's just, I don't think it fits in that particular setting as good as some of those other options. And it's obvious. I mean, you and I have taught, you offer these classes and three to five people show up.
And
it's usually the office lady or something,
Right. It's unfortunate. Like, I hate that. It's like, so how long you been in the industry? Oh, I'm not in the industry. My dad just said that I should take your class.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But where, if we were to offer that as like an on-demand type of thing, now people could absorb that on their own time, and they could even like I said, like they can listen to it, you can listen to it while you're cruising around. You don't have to watch and follow along and write down a bunch of stuff. But I think that would be a great opportunity, and we should definitely work on something like that. And if you've got some information that's already put together, that would be great. And I would love to do that with you for sure.
Yeah. Let's have a whole separate conversation on that. Cause I think there's an avenue there, and I like the way you laid it out, cause that makes a lot of sense on why they've got to strike when the iron is hot, and it's a hands-on piece. That might be the only opportunity they get that.
Yeah.
What I don't like is they're going to go the marketing class or the sales class, the employee retention class is important. Mm-hmm. I'll get to that later. And unfortunately getting to it later sometimes never happens.
It does. Yeah. And that's the problem with it. And then there again, I mean, I don't like to say this, and it comes across a bit negative, but the locksmiths are terrible businessmen for the most part, men and women. I mean, I really hate to say it, but a lot of times they are. And it's because of those things that you mentioned. You know, how many cases can you think of where, the guy works all his life and didn't hire people, didn't bring other people on, or maybe did one or two. And then now he's 60, 70 years old. It's time to retire. Yeah. And what does that business really have to offer? You've got a van, some tools, maybe a Google My Business listing that's got some reviews. But really, at the end of the day, that doesn't hold any tangible value or any asset value like it used to. If you were selling your business in the 80s and 90s, sure, you've got the number one phone book ad, you've got a full page ad there, you've got a lot of things where that business was, it took a year or two to start up. You can't, it's not like now where you just click and you're live and you hang your shingle and now you're a business operator.
Right.
Exactly. Like it's instant gratification. It took some time. And so that has also stripped away the value of those pre-existing lock shops. And so now guys get to the end of their career and there's not a whole lot left there. And it's certainly not what they need to retire on. I mean, I don't know about you, but right now, if you don't have $1 million in the bank by the time you go to retire, even then, you're still not really, I mean, that might get you another decade or two,
right.
But it's not a lot. It's sure not a lot.
Yeah, you got to plan on dying soon.
I mean, it's horrible to think about, but we've been blessed and cursed with this self-realization of our own mortality.
So what are your thoughts about locksmiths? I always said if I became a locksmith, I would specialize in master keying. Because I think that is the one of the areas where I can really lock myself into a customer. So if I was ready to sell a business, I could say I've got X amount of customers that I take care of their security system because of their master keying system. And so when you were saying about the value of a locksmith shop, so many of the customers come and go because they don't need you that often. But a master keying system seems to be, unless you have something else in your head, seems to be one of the best ways to keep a current customer list. But you've got to learn to market to them. You got to contact them on a regular basis as well.
Yeah, I would say restricted keyway is a great way to maintain customers. Restricted keyway, so they have to come to you for the blanks. And then master key systems would be good as well.
Yeah.
But again, I would say all of that is you might be able to maintain a customer for the next 3 to 5, maybe 10 years on something like that. But what's really happening is access control is taking over all of that. Really what I'm finding where the RMR is, or the monthly recurring revenue, is selling those access control systems. And then those access control systems then have RMR built in on the back end. If you just spent, $100,000 on access control, you're obviously going to spend the $500 a year to maintain that system and be able to access it remotely and there. And that's really like the master keying thing. You have to physically come there. You have to physically change. You have to keep track. There's a lot involved with it. And it was a great way to maintain a customer for 20 or 30 years. But even that, I think, is starting to see, we're going to see that taper off pretty drastically.
Really? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not happening. It's happening. But, really what's going to happen is the master key is going to be the key, the mechanical key that operates the entire facility on one key, not multiple keys. And then the access control is going to dictate who can go, what, when, who, what, when, where, why.
I like that. All right. Good, good. Hey, I just wanted, I grabbed the book and
grab it.
This other thing, because we were talking about this around page 70, 71 is this one worksheet. All right. About setting goals. And as we're talking about this, I think it's really important for anybody to sit here and start with this ultimate goal. And the ultimate goal could be a succession plan. The ultimate goal is going to be, I want 3 vehicles on the road. I want a second location. I want 5 employees, whatever the ultimate goal is. And then work backwards and start doing this whole, so in 10 years, what would I have to do to get to that ultimate goal? In 3 years, what would I have to do to get to the 10-year goal? In 1 year, what would I have to do to get to that 3-year goal? And it starts breaking it down to, what do I have to do this year? What do I have to do this quarter? What do I have to do this month to make that shorter-term dream come true so I can reach that ultimate goal? And too often, what ends up happening is, like I said in the beginning, some of these guys I would talk to, and they'd be like, I don't know what I'm doing next week. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't have a number to hit to shoot for this year.
Right.
Okay. And those are the people that I really, really wanted to help to go, you are so good at your job, but not good at the business end of it.
Yeah.
And there's just a handful of things. If you'd learn these things,
You
could do so much better. Plus you'd lead a less stressful life.
Right. Not have to worry about what bills are coming due or a van broken.
Right.
You know, this or the other, you've got money in the bank to go ahead and deal with those problems. But there again, yeah. I think that's the second part of the equation as to why the business classes and marketing classes yeah. don't fill up at trade show is we're human beings. And, yeah. you know, the pleasure pain thing is what drives us. And people are going to seek pleasure and avoid pain. And business is pain because they're not.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yes. You know, they're just they have to admit to themselves that, A, I'm not good at this and yep. I need help, which is problem yep. number one. I mean, locksmiths have an ego.
yeah. Yeah. Well, like know. Anybody. Right. Right. Yeah.
Like anyone. Yeah. And then, OK, now I've got to admit that I'm not very good at business and I've got to go into this. And now I've got to be open to learning something new and open to accepting some new information. I can go through all of that in my brain, or I can take this really cool Leashy class that I want to take, or the safe yep. opening class, and I'm going to feel really good about making sure that I can do more of my job to repeat the same thing that I've been sure. doing that's not working over and over and over again right. to be right back here next year in the same position with no help.
That's it, man. And so if just think about that, these two things that I'm bringing up is setting up your core values, right? To yep. understand this is what I stand for. Yep. This is how I'm going to design my business around these core values.
Right.
And I'm setting some goals. Yeah. This is where I want to go. And then everything you do is you say every morning, what am I going to do today? I'm going to do this, this, and this. And you ask yourself, do these things fit in with my core values? Yes. Will they help me attain my goals? Yes. Then do them.
Yes.
Right.
If or avoid against, them.
right. Yeah. If they're against my core values, or if they will deter me from hitting my goals, then don't do them.
Yeah.
You know, just being able to do that, just that when I started my business, that was like the first things that I did. I laid it out and it makes the day to day so much easier.
Because
when I put stuff on my to-do list, I've got to get this done next week. I look at it and I go, I don't need to get this. This doesn't help me in any regard. This is more the fun things Marty wants to do, not the logical things that are going to help me. All right.
Yeah.
You know, you got to make fun, make some time for the fun stuff, but business is business. I want to grow. I want to prosper. So I've got to have a plan in doing
that. Yeah. You got to have a GSD list, get stuff done list. And that has to work with your core values. And like you said, and I know that goal setting, it sounds cliche. You've heard it since you were a little kid in elementary school, you know, goals, goals, goals. What they've really found out, and I'm sure you understand the science of this as well, based off of your library, is that people, they've done studies. I think Harvard or somebody, Yale or somebody did a study, and they followed these kids and they said, all right, well, here's this batch of 100 kids. And they set goals, and later in life, something like 80% of them, you know, were much further along, much happier in life, much more financially stable, et cetera, versus the people that didn't actually write those goals down and just kind of bounced around like a pinball. And they actually followed up with them when they were in their 20s, when they were 25, when they were in their 30s, when they were in their 40s. And the goal setting, it just sets another tone in your mind. And yet again, now you're creating more neural pathways. I mean, in order for you to learn something, learning is just your brain connecting dots and creating neural pathways. And again, you thinking about it is one, but then that thought kind of flutters away when you actually use handwriting and write it out or type it into a computer or type it into something. Now it becomes more real. And then if you set that, like, I even coach people too, and like set up that goal list and make that the background of your phone. Make that your wallpaper.
I like
that. Just stare at it every day.
Right.
So you can't miss it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the other thing that people are afraid of is, oh, if I set this goal, what if I can't make it? What if I don't do this? Am I a failure? I'm afraid of a failure, so I don't want to do this. Is to realize, give yourself permission to change your goals.
Yeah.
You know, there are internal forces and external forces that affect us on a daily basis. And although I may say, this is what I want to do in 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is, who's to say that the environment doesn't change? The financial environment changes, right? Competition moves in. Maybe you discover something new. There's new products that are offered, new customers move in, whatever it is, your goals may change. So set the goals, but also give yourself permission to change the goals when necessary. Don't change them out of fear. Don't change them out of procrastination. Don't change them out of, laziness. Change them when it's necessary to change them, but still have some dream in your head of the direction you want to go into.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great point too. And I think there's some metaphors for that too, with like the strongest trees, the strongest wood is in the forest that have the most wind, that the trees are the most flexible. If you're not flexible, then it just breaks and you break, it breaks you.
Right.
If you're not willing to be flexible. And like you said, you know, you gotta, what my goals were in my 20s and 30s are obviously a whole lot different from what they are now. It takes is, you know, I thought I was invincible and bulletproof. And then all of a sudden I've got a back surgery last year that just, you know, completely laid me up and laid me out and just, you know, wiped out savings and a bunch of other stuff. And you kind of get slapped with reality that maybe you're not superhuman, you know?
Right.
You've got to kind of rely on those things that you've put in place. And luckily I did have help and had employees and stuff to help get through that. But by the same token, that stuff comes out of nowhere and health restrictions, that's going to come for everybody.
Yeah.
A staggering amount of people on the statistics end up dead or dead broke by age 60, which is insane. Absolutely insane.
Isn't that crazy? And it's
scary. It's scary.
Just that little bit of, I work with kids, it's really cool. One of the things that keeps me young is I teach kids public speaking and debate skills.
Oh yeah.
I work with kids as young as 7 years old.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And it's the coolest thing is to understand how their mind works and how they're growing and they're changing. So I have like these elementary school kids, I have middle school kids, and I have high school students that I teach. And it's the dynamics of reminding yourself how we thought as children.
Right.
Where our mind was open to wonder, right?
Right.
And we start to lose that as an adult.
Yeah.
Okay? And then on the flip side, I have a couple of mentors I work with who are well into their 80s. So I like looking at where I came from, and I like looking at where I'm going to go and try to then really nurture the moment I'm in.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'll tell you, it's so cool because I don't want to be one of those statistics, like you said. Die one day. All right.
Yeah.
I want to, hold on to every day and really just do something meaningful, bring some joy to myself and hopefully help some other people.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Exactly. For sure. And you're leaving something along the way with the books.
Yep. Exactly. You're
leaving something for other people to pick up. And that's what I really think helps out too, is like you and I, we are, and people that are out there too, you are most qualified to help who you were 10 years ago. Right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I want to add one other thing to this whole thing, and it's just really genius stuff about how to lead a fulfilling life.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's really leading a good life, a fulfilling life. And it's three different parts to it, right? And I call it shine, sharpen, and share.
Yeah.
And the reason it's important here, this is not just me getting philosophical, but this is important because it'll help your business as well as your life. And it's the shine, sharpen, and share. So the shine is find those things you love and that you're good at that bring you joy. And I don't care if you say it's fishing, it's golf, it's picking locks, it's barbecuing, whatever it is. Find those things and give yourself enough time for personal happiness. Do something like that because you owe it to yourself.
Right.
Second is the sharpen, is what are you doing to improve yourself? Intellectual enrichment. How are you evolving and growing? I love to read and I love to write and share and get this information down on paper, right?
Yeah.
And so we have to grow every day. Sometimes we don't want to change. We want to stay stagnant. But you need to keep changing. You know, you got to be a shark. You got to keep moving. Otherwise, you're just going to die, right?
Yep.
And then last thing is sharing. If you're really good at something, it brings you great joy, and you're sharpening those skills, getting better and better, you've got to share it with other people.
Right.
The true meaning of life is being in service of other people. Yeah. All right. And so you, because really think about it. If I'm good at something and I'm improving it, why not share it with other people? Don't right. keep it to yourself. So sell it, give it away, trade it, barter it, whatever you need to do, but get it out in front of people. So that's one of the reasons I like teaching the classes and I like writing the books, is because the knowledge in my head, it's what good is it if it's just sitting in my head? Get it out to as many people as possible. Okay.
Right.
It's the same thing. I see the exact same thing in you. I know that you set time aside all the time to do things that just make you happy. I don't know exactly what your hobbies are, but I'm sure that you take Wayne time, right?
you would be surprised. Usually Wayne time is video editing and putting things back out for the community to help other people. That's usually Wayne time. Wayne time is giving back to the community.
There you go.
Because
that brings you some joy, right?
It does. It really does. And like you, what I'm really mostly about, what really lights me up right now is when I'm teaching a class and somebody gets it. You know that moment where somebody...
The eureka moment.
That's what lights me up, is showing somebody that eureka moment that's been beating their head against the wall.
And then
all of a sudden they get it and now they can, move on, whether that's a tactical task or whether that's a business task or that's a marketing task or just something general in life in general,
where
they grab that concept, they can apply that concept and then use it for them. And then now you can see that it actually works. And they can take it and move on with it for sure.
So
for sure.
Eureka moment it's important as a teacher, a coach, an instructor to understand that if you're not getting that, you're missing the boat. You're not as good of an instructor as you think you are. Too often I see instructors going, these people, they don't pay attention. They're not listening. They're not understanding. You're not teaching to your class. You're teaching for yourself.
Anytime you're pointing the finger at somebody else, you're already in the wrong. That's the problem.
Right.
And once you fix this, that problem will resolve itself.
Correct. You got to teach to your audience, not just blow warm air out of your mouth.
Right. That's crazy. Well, I mean, that as expected, when we were talking previously, it has been an hour and it has flown right by.
I just saw that. Right. Exactly. So this has been great.
It has been great. We will definitely be working on a class together. We'll try and get that out there. We want to do some giveaways. Which of these books are you going to do a giveaway on?
I'll tell you what, you tell me how many books, how many of these copies would you like me to give away?
It's up to you. It's your book. You had mentioned maybe three.
Three of these. And I'll tell you what, if people find of interest, I would love to give away three of these, and I'll give away three of the Legends of Sales.
Yep. There.
All right. Perfect.
All right.
You tell me how you make that work.
Yeah. So what we'll do is when this airs, if to enter to win, the people will share this on their, they'll share the link on their social media page and they'll take a screenshot and they'll email it to me, tricountylocksmithservice@gmail.com. They'll send me a picture of that screenshot, and the first three people to do that will give you their contact information and you can send them the books.
Good.
And
I'm going to share it. So maybe I'll win my own book.
Yep. So that'll be great. That'll be a good way to get this information out there. Anybody, if you're thinking about starting that locksmith business, go ahead and do it and take that first step and take that leap. It doesn't matter. Every single mountain climber that's climbed Mount Everest, that journey started with that first step. And that's always the hardest one, because that's the commitment step. You have to finally own it, absorb it, commit to it, and then take that first step and move forward. And reading and getting these books and actually filling them out and writing it down, that will reinforce your confidence to build you up to take that first step, because it is scary. We've talked about this before. Like, I'm actually reflecting, I'm writing a book now too, and like when I go back and like kind of reflect on how I got here, it's pure insanity. you're gonna take a well high paying job, and you're going to leave that. You're going to explain this to your family. I'm going to leave this security and I'm going to move away, you know, an hour and a half away, and I'm going to learn something, a completely different trade that I've never even tried before whatsoever, and become a business owner and business operator and manager and owner, and move you guys up with me.
Wow.
How does that sound to everybody? And if we fail, we lose everything.
Exactly. That's all. That's
just all. A little bit of pressure.
But by
the same token, that pressure, it's like a diamond. Like, I had to have that pressure. And that's why I am the person that I am here today.
Yeah.
And that's why I am so motivated, because failure was not an option. It was literally sink or swim or drown. You know,
there you go.
You either have to figure this out or you're going to end up flat on your face and you might not get back up again. So that's why I just run with every opportunity. You pull a cylinder eater tool out, I'm going to jump up and grab it and try and put it to work. You show me something over here, I want to get hands on. I want to get into it. I want to dive deep. I want to know everything about it. And then I want to help explain that to other people, A, give feedback to you about what my experience was with that, and then tell other people what that experience was too.
That's it. And I'm going to echo what you said, is that there was plenty of nights I laid in bed going, what am I doing? Right? Tomorrow, I'm brushing up my resume. I'm going back. This is madness, right? But you stick with it if you've got that fire within you.
Yeah.
And I like you mentioned that, like, that sink or swim is the idea of, I view life as that swimming pool. And some people come running out of the locker room and just jump in. Other people climb the ladder, do a perfect swan dive. Some people have to dip their toe in slowly. And some of us have to be pushed into the pool, but we're all going to get wet eventually. So just do it.
Life will shove you into the pool. And I kind of use that as, you know, I always take those painful moments and turn them into power. I'd always take them and turn them into fuel. And, you know, just even like running for president for the association, like, I burned my boat.
Congratulations, by the way.
I appreciate that. But I burned the boats. Like, I could have reapplied for Southwest board director position, and I was told to do so. But I didn't do it specifically so that I could channel all of that energy and all of that focus into the goal. And when you remove the safety net and increase the stakes, that's where that's where I perform and when I shine, because failure is simply no longer an option. I don't have a retreat method anymore. There's just do it or you're done. The end. You know, so just some good stuff for people out there.
Right.
Again, this has been a fantastic interview. Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've covered some great topics. Everybody, just check these books out. They're really, really valuable. A couple of things to remember. There are so many smart people, and I can't remember exactly who said it, but, you know, show me your library and I'll show you your future. You know, and obviously your library is very, very full, and it's basically including what you surround yourself with. If you surround yourself with positive things, with good, how to communicate, how to learn, how to run your business better, how to operate better, all these little tricks, and you keep soaking that up, it's like you're cocooning yourself in this environment to succeed.
Yeah.
And that's really where everybody owes their success to, even the greats. They read books,
you
know, once you start getting into personal development and business development and marketing, you can see how they all lead back to like Carnegie's type stuff. You know, everybody branches out from those kind of like the Rockefeller classes and the Carnegie classes and things like that. And it all branches back to that. It's just everybody's got their own individual story that goes along with it to make it unique about what made success for them.
There you go. So you know what I advise anyone listening is reach out to this guy, reach out to Wayne for business advice, locksmith advice, life advice, whatever it takes. Cause I think Wayne, you got it all going on. So
and vice versa. You've got your Master Happiness. I highly encourage people, masterhappiness.com to check out your stuff. And you do a lot of coaching and a lot of one-on-one consulting and business advice as well. So I would really inspire people to reach out to you and consume these books, read them, listen to them, do whatever it takes to absorb that information and just start expanding your knowledge. And you'll really watch everything start to unfold after that happens in a very, very beautiful way. So thanks again, Marty. Have a wonderful day. We'll see everybody later. Thanks for watching.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Welcome to the Locksmith Security Network. LSN is your powerful resource hosted by Wayne Winton for all things locksmith and security.